Assalamu alaikum students. On behalf of the Ministry of Science and Technology, Virtual University of Pakistan and Mubashir Humayun, I welcome you to another lecture in financial management. In today's lecture, we are going to talk about a very specialized art in finance that is known as mergers and acquisitions, or M&A. Now, the art of mergers and acquisitions is a very, very detailed one, and in college you can spend an entire term taking a course purely on mergers and acquisitions. But we are going to cover this area in one single lecture and kindly go over the slides in detail and also read chapter 25 of Brigham and Kapinski, 8th edition, which goes over the subject of mergers and acquisitions. Now, mergers and acquisitions basically is about the buying and the selling of firms, or the buying and selling of parts of the firm. A firm is composed of different parts or divisions or departments, and in mergers and acquisitions we take a look at both the buying and selling of entire firms and companies, whether they are public limited, private, or proprietorships, and we also take a look at the buying and selling of single divisions and single departments of companies. The level of activity in the buying and selling of firms in the world has seen three very, very intense phases, at least in the previous century. One of those phases took place in the 1920s. Another phase took place after the war in the 1950s, and particularly during the 60s. And the third phase, and perhaps the most intense one, took place in the 1980s. During these phases, there was intense and feverish activity in the buying and selling of firms. Now, the first questions that we need to ask ourselves are related to the merger itself and what the need of a merger is. Why do firms merge? There are various and numerous reasons for why firms merge. And one of the most important reasons is diversification. We spoke about diversification when we were studying the risk-return theory, and we mentioned that by diversifying the investments across different industries and across different countries, an investor is able to reduce the level of risk. Similarly, firms choose to merge or to acquire or buy other firms in different countries and in different industries in order to reduce the level of risk that they are facing in their existing business. Another reason why firms merge is for long-term strategic value. What do we mean by this? We are talking about the potential gains in sales and market share that may be invisible in the short term, but over a period of time, when firms in different countries are collaborating, or when one firm in one country buys another firm in a different country, then they have access to certain strategic advantages by being close to the end users, or perhaps lower cost of raw materials that are available close to the place of production, that also allow companies economies of scale. So these are different reasons why firms prefer to merge. Another very, very important reason why firms merge is to improve their financials, to make their financial statements, their balance sheets, the profit and loss statements, and the cash flow statements look better. And mergers are one of the quickest ways of making changes in the balance sheet. Remember, that it takes firms a certain amount of time to reach their desired level of sales or their desired capital structure. And oftentimes it is much quicker for firms to simply buy another firm and to acquire its assets and to make a quick change in its capital structure this way. One reason for mergers that became very, very popular in the 1980s was the hunt for cash. And it was very common for hostile takeovers to be taking place. We will talk about these in a minute. Situations where individuals and companies forcibly acquire the shares of another company and take it over. And they take it over, why? Because that target company may have a very large pool of cash reserves. Or that target company might have very, very liquid assets that can easily be sold in order to raise cash. In another situation, the companies acquire a target firm, and that situation is known as cherry picking. In the case of cherry picking, the acquiring firm that is buying the other firm finds it cheaper to buy an entire firm rather than replacing its own assets because they have become old and depreciated. For example, in the oil industry, at one time and at several times in history, it has been better for oil companies to buy other small oil companies rather than to buy the assets and the hardware separately because their own hardware has become old. So cherry picking is another reason, because the market value of an entire firm might actually be lower than the cost of replacing old assets. That can happen. Another very common cash-based reason for mergers is known as asset stripping. And asset stripping, basically, the acquiring firm buys the target firm, takes its assets, chops them up into little pieces, and sells them one at a time at a high profit. And just to give you a simple analogy or example, this is what shipbreakers in Pakistan do. They buy entire old ships at a relatively cheap amount, and I don't mean to suggest by cheap that we're talking about a few thousand rupees. It costs crores of rupees, hundreds of millions of rupees, in fact, to buy a ship. But once they buy the old ship, they then break it up. That's why it's called ship breaking. And they sell off different parts of the ship independently to various people. So the kitchen tables of a ship might be sold to a restaurant owner, and the boilers and the geysers of a ship might be sold to a factory. And by breaking the ship up into smaller pieces and selling them separately, the shipbreaker can recover greater value. And that is like asset stripping. Another very, very common reason for mergers is simply the desire for power and control by the manager of firms. The managers, as well as the corporate raiders, which we'll talk about in a minute, oftentimes have the desire to, number one, protect their own jobs. So, if you are the manager of a firm that has been taken over, then you have new shareholders and owners and a new board of directors. And they might decide to fire you and you might lose your job. So there is a risk. However, if you are the manager of a firm that takes over another firm, then Now your firm has become larger and your responsibilities have become larger and you are probably entitled to a larger salary. And there's a very close correlation between the size of the business and the salary paid to managers and chief executives. So managers have an interest in acquiring other companies because they can increase their salaries. And of course, this is related to the issue of agency costs that we have been talking about for a long time. And agency costs is the area of finance that pays attention to the conflict between shareholders and managers. Remember, our objective in financial management was to maximize the wealth of the shareholders or the owners, not maximizing the wealth of the managers. However, there is sometimes a conflict because managers take actions and make financial decisions that are not in the better interest of the shareholders, but rather that they are in the better interest of themselves. And that is where there can be a loss of value of the firm and an agency cost. So shareholders need to monitor the actions of the management in order to make sure that they are making financial decisions that are in line with the financial objective, which is maximization of shareholder wealth. Now, let us ask ourselves, how are mergers financed? If, for example, you are interested in buying another company, how will you pay for it? Well, there are various ways to pay for a company. You can pay with cash. And if you don't have enough cash, then you can pay by giving various marketable securities that you own. Or if you are a company, then you can offer the shares of your own company in order to buy the shares of another company. Or you can borrow money from a bank and use the loan or debt in order to buy the shares of another company. Oftentimes, the most popular combination has been to pay in the form of cash and stock. Although there was a certain period of time in the 80s when the LBOs or leveraged buyouts, whereby you borrow money in order to buy another company, became very, very popular. And we will talk about that in a short while. But before we do that, let us talk about some of the terminology and definitions and classification of mergers. So the mergers can be categorized into two broad types. One of them is the financial merger. And in financial mergers, when two firms combine, then the operations of the two firms remain independent. They are not connected, or rather they are not integrated into one another, but they remain independent. The operations and the management also remain independent in the case of the financial merger. Now, this is in contrast to the operating merger, in which when two firms combine, the operations and the management of the two firms are integrated into one another. And this means that there is restructuring and re-engineering of both of the operations of the firm that takes place. So the operating merger welds and integrates the companies to a much larger extent than the financial merger. Another way to categorize mergers is as follows. It's possible to talk about four different kinds of mergers. One being the horizontal merger. Now, it's called horizontal because financial analysts view the industry or any one industry as having various different competitors as well as producers and suppliers. So different competitors of the same product or similar products in an industry constitute the horizontal plane. And horizontal mergers are those mergers between two competitors making similar products. Horizontal mergers can also take place between companies that are producing or distributing similar products but may not be competitors necessarily, but they are in the same industry. The second category is that of vertical mergers. And in vertical mergers, we are talking about the merger of two firms that are in the same industry and that have a supplier and buyer relationship. Now, it's not necessary for the two firms to be in the same industry as long as they have a supplier-buyer relationship. And that is why it is called a vertical merger, because if you talk about the chain of manufacturing, starting from the raw materials to the semi-finished goods to the finished goods, then we see that as a vertical chain. And manufacturers of the raw material or processors of the raw material are called the upstream manufacturers, and processors and manufacturers of the semi-finished and finished products are the downstream manufacturers. So that is the vertical merger. So the third category of mergers is known as the congeneric mergers, and these are mergers taking place in the same industry but not necessarily between firms that are buyers, suppliers, or that are competitors. The final category of mergers then is known as the conglomerate merger, and the conglomerate merger is the merger of firms that are in unrelated or different industries. It's very important for me to point out to you that when we're talking about mergers or the combination of two or more firms into one firm, then one of the most important reasons for that taking place and the manner in which the chief executives justify that is by appealing to the concept of synergy. And synergy is this extra value that managers feel is created when two firms are combined into one. And this extra value that is created because of new operational efficiencies and economies of scale and streamlining and cost cutting of the operations in order to make the combined firm leaner and more efficient. So one simple way of understanding this concept of synergy is that the value of the combined firm is more than the individual values of the two firms before the merger. In other words, simply speaking, 2 + 2 can equal to 5. And there is extra value being created as a result of the merger. So we have spoken about the definition and categorization of mergers. Now let's talk about a different kind of merger that is known as acquisition. The acquisition is the most common kind of merger. And in this case, we are talking about one firm that buys or acquires another firm. And the buying firm, the firm that buys, is known as the acquiring firm. And the firm that is bought is known as the target firm. Now, the acquisitions can be categorized into two broad categories. One that is known as hostile acquisitions or hostile takeovers, and the other one is known as friendly takeovers. And we will talk in a short while about hostile takeovers. And these are unfriendly takeovers, where the target firm does not want to be taken over, but they are forcibly taken over by another firm. The final kind of merger to talk about is the reverse merger, and that is known as divestiture. In divestiture, a simple way of understanding it is that just as we spoke about the synergy or the new value that is created from a merger, similarly, there can be value that is created from divestiture. In other words, you can interpret this as 5 minus 1 is still equal to 5. Why? Well, because by getting rid of or selling an inefficient or underproductive division of a company, it can save costs and it can reduce losses. So therefore, it can add value. Now, there are basically three kinds of divestitures that I'd like to mention here. One of them is known as the sell-off. And in the case of the sell-off, the firm, as the name suggests, transfers the ownership of a particular division or one of its subsidiary companies to another firm. So here we're talking about the transfer of ownership. The second kind of divestiture is known as the spin-off. And in the case of the spin-off, the parent company transfers the management control of one of its divisions to another firm. Only the management control is transferred, not the ownership. This is the same the concept that I brought up when we were talking about lease financing, the difference between ownership and control. Managers control the company. Shareholders own the company. The third kind of divestiture is known as the liquidation. And in the case of the liquidation, one of the divisions of a firm is sold off. In other words, its ownership is transferred. And after the sale, the cash that is received is distributed amongst the shareholders of the division or the company that was sold. So I've just gone over here the different kinds of mergers, the definitions of mergers, acquisitions, and divestitures, and also the different ways that you can categorize them, and it makes it a little bit easier to understand the mechanics of the merger that we will be talking about next. Now, there are various issues and problems associated with mergers, and naturally we don't have time to go over all of them in this one course, but let me introduce you to some of these issues. The first and most problematic one, perhaps, is that of monopoly. And the problem is that in most countries, the firms and companies are prevented from increasing monopoly control. And of course, as a result of two or more companies combining to form one company, it is possible to increase the concentration of power in the hands of one company and to increase the market share under one company. And this, of course, is restrained by means of the anti-monopoly and antitrust laws in various countries. And the logic of these laws is that in order to promote free and fair competition amongst many different competitors, countries have to prevent the formation of monopolies. The other issues that are connected with mergers include issues that are concerned with hostile takeovers or hostile raids. Now, corporate raiders are individuals that forcibly try to take over the shareholding and the ownership of another company. And there are various problems associated with that. Firstly, how do corporate raiders forcibly take over another company? I mean, a company is not like somebody's wallet or a jewelry item that can be stolen without the other person finding out. You cannot very well go out and secretly steal a company away from its shareholders and owners. So how do they go about it? Well, it used to be that corporate traders used to engage in proxy battles. Remember that shareholders carry voting rights, and they used to converse and do electioneering. They used to approach the different shareholders and convince them to surrender their voting power to them. And once they had a contract which allowed them to take over the voting power of the majority shareholders, more than 50%, then they were in a position to get a seat on the board of directors, and they were in a position to make changes in the company, important changes related to the sale of the company and related to the ownership of the company. So that's the way it used to be. Nowadays, it's more common for the corporate traders to offer a tender price for the share. In other words, generally now, if corporate traders want to forcibly take over another company, then, for example, they might give an ad in the paper making an offer to buy the shares of that company at a price that is maybe 20% higher than the market price. And they will make this offer for a limited time only, perhaps 2 or 3 weeks, during which any of the shareholders of the target firm's shares have the option of selling their shares to the corporate trader and getting a premium value in return. So this is how corporate traders attract the shareholders into selling their shares to them. Now, the issues that are connected with the corporate raiders and particularly with hostile takeovers are many. Keep in mind that when a company is forcibly being taken over, it has to take certain remedial measures. Just like when a country is attacked by another country, it is forced to defend itself. And defending yourself has costs attached to it. It's costly to try to defend yourself. And similarly, it's costly for companies to try to defend themselves. What are some of the techniques that companies use to protect themselves and to defend themselves against corporate traders? Well, one of these devices is known as the poison pill. And it's called the poison pill because companies use this technique in order to make themselves appear unhealthy or poisoned. So how do the companies do this? Well, generally by taking on an excessive amount of short-term debt that increases their debt ratio and makes their balance sheet very unattractive because of the high amount of liabilities. Therefore, they become unattractive for the corporate trader to buy. Another technique that companies use to defend themselves against corporate traders is to use the help of a white knight. And these white knights are individuals or firms that are friendly to the company and that agree to buy the shares of the company at a price that is higher than what the corporate trader is offering to the shareholders. And of course, this white knight then agrees to either hold the shares and allow the existing management to remain or to sell the shares back to the company. Now, of course, it generally does not happen in the case of war that one country strategically decides to submit to another one and allow another country to take it over. But in the case of companies, one company that is about to be taken over may decide to allow another company to take it over and to be acquired. And the reason for this is simple, because if the corporate raider or the company that is taking over is willing to pay a price to the shareholders that is much higher than the market price, then there is an increase in the value and there is a gain in the value for the shareholders of the target firm. So they might decide to be taken over, and that would be a conscious decision. Now let's talk about a very, very specialized and important kind of merger that is based on debt financing, and that is known as the leveraged buyout, or LBO. Now let me explain to you the mechanism of the LBO. Quite simply, the acquiring firm decides to borrow money from a bank or to take a loan in order to buy the shares of another firm that is being publicly held. In other words, they are using borrowed capital to buy the shares of another company that are being held by the general investors or the general public. And after buying those shares by means of a share tender offer, the acquiring firm is able to effectively privatize the company. Now, by privatizing over here, I mean that a company whose shares were previously held by the general public and the general investors are now being held by a single company. So its shareholding has become tighter, and in some way it has become more private. So now the company has succeeded in acquiring another company. It then needs to pay back the banks and the debt holders because it took a loan in order to buy the other company. So in order to repay the loan, the firm decides to do what I told you earlier, which is asset stripping. In this case, they take some of the assets of the company and sell them off in order to raise cash, and with that cash they repay the lenders or the banks. Then the company goes through restructuring, and it goes through downsizing and re-engineering in order to make the company more efficient and leaner. And after that has been done, then the owners and the managers can decide to make this company go public again. Now, what the company would do in this case is to issue fresh stock and to sell the shares in the stock market and to allow the business partners and the stakeholders and the investment bankers who helped the company take over and to give them an opportunity to recover their investment and to make capital gains. So by going public again, this firm is giving the opportunity to the deal makers to recover their investment and to make a profit or to cash out. Now, one of the advantages of the leverage buyout, of course, is that it increases the level of debt in the target company, and this can be an advantage provided the debt is not excessive, in the sense that if you recall the capital structure theory, when the debt increases, then the leverage increases, which means that the overall cost of capital may reduce, and also what this means is that the return on equity can increase. So increasing the debt can have a leveraging effect or a magnifying effect in the increase in the return on equity. So if the EBIT or the sales increases by a small amount, then the ROE or the return on equity for this firm would increase by a much larger amount. Finally, I would like to mention that one type of LBO or leverage buyout is also known as the management buyout. And that's called going private. And going private what happens is that the management of the firm decides to raise the debt financing and to get a loan in order to buy the shares of its own company. So that is known as the management buyout. Now, there are many costs and externalities that are associated with mergers, and I would like to mention just a few of them. The first one that I would like to talk about is that there can be a temporary change in the stock price while companies are being merged. And this can have a negative effect because it can distort the actual picture, and it can cause disruptions and distortions in the actual market price, and that can give the wrong signals to the investors. So that is one problem associated with mergers. Another problem that is associated with mergers is that the target companies that are under the threat of being taken over can be forced to take very drastic measures that create a loss in value. For example, the poison pills that I mentioned earlier, the case in which the target firms take on an excessive amount of short-term loans or debts can be catastrophic for the company because they might not be able to service the loan and they might not be able to pay the interest. So that is another negative effect that can be caused by mergers. Of course, the positive side of mergers is that there can be synergy and cost-cutting and increase in efficiency and economies of scale. However, the downside and the negative social impact of mergers can be that as a result of merging, when two companies become one, then there is generally a cost-cutting and there is also a streamlining of the operations to remove the repetitive steps and the repetitive and redundant divisions, and there is also generally a downsizing or a reduction in the manpower and staff, and that can lead to unemployment. So these are some of the issues that you have to be aware of when talking about mergers. Okay, now let's talk about the valuation of mergers and how do we assess the value of the target firm and also the value of the firm after the merger, the combined firm. There are basically two approaches that I will mention to you here. The first one is known as the discounted cash flows approach or the DCF approach. And this is the same approach that we used in capital budgeting at the start of this course. The second approach is known as the market multiple analysis or MMA approach. Let's talk about the discounted cash flow approach first. So in this DCF approach, we will estimate the value of the firm after the merger based on the present value equation. So the present value or PV is equal to CF1 divided by 1 plus R plus CF2 divided by 1 plus R squared plus CF3 divided by 1 plus R cubed and so on. And over here CFs refer to the future cash flows forecasted from the pro forma cash flow statements, and these forecasts should be more than 5 years into the future. And R refers to the discount rate. Now, in the present value equation for calculating the value of the combined firm after the merger, you should keep in mind that these cash flow terms are referring to the incremental cash flows after tax for the combined firm, and they also need to take into account whatever incremental cash flows, new incremental cash flows that are taking place as a result of the merger and a result of the change in the operations. The second variable that we need to focus on is the discount rate in the PV equation, and this discount rate is the required rate of return for the prospective investors, and in this case the prospective investors are the shareholders of the acquiring company, the company that is going to take over the other company. So we need to use the discount rate and set it equal to the required rate of return on equity, and we have already learned how to calculate the RE. If you take a look at the slide, we can look at the formula you can use in order to calculate the required return on equity. So taking a look at the slide and using the capital asset pricing model theory and the security market line, we can estimate the required return on equity or RE and use that as a discount rate in our present value formula. We can calculate the RE from the beta or the market risk of the target firm. Then the REL or the required return on equity for the levered firm is equal to R sub RF plus RM minus RF multiplied by the beta of the levered firm. Again, over here, R sub RF is equal to the risk-free rate of return or the T-bill rate of return, and RM is equal to the market rate of return. And RM minus RF is the risk premium. Also note that the beta of the levered firm can be calculated from the beta of the unlevered firm. Beta L is equal to beta U multiplied by 1 plus 1 minus TC multiplied by D divided by E. And here TC is equal to the corporate tax rate, and D is the market value of debt, and E is the market value of the equity. So the discounted cash flow approach is generally considered to be the most thorough, the most detailed, and the best approach for calculating the value of the merger. However, it is time-consuming, and it is difficult to forecast the cash flows and to estimate the discount rate. So an alternative method for calculating the value of a firm is to use the market multiple analysis, or MMA. Now, the MMA is very simple, and basically it is an ad hoc kind of a formula that is used, and that varies from industry to industry, and it changes with time. So let me give you an example of the kind of MMA values that can be used in order to estimate the value of a firm in a particular industry. So for example, if we are trying to estimate the value of a textile spinning mill in Pakistan, then these days it is estimated that the value of the firm is equal to 10 multiplied by the annual earnings, or 10 multiplied by the annual net income. And how did we come up with this figure of 10? Well, this is based on stock market analysis reports. You can get the stock prices of different shares in Pakistan from the daily newspaper, and you can also get their earnings per share or EPS from the annual reports and also from the stock exchange. You can then calculate the price to earnings ratio, which is equal to the market price per share divided by the earnings per share. And the average price earning ratio for the textile spinning sector in the stock exchange these days is equal to 10. And that is how we came up with the value 10. So you can estimate the value of a textile spinning company simply by multiplying its annual income by 10. Similarly, you can use the MMA approach to calculate or estimate the value of a software house that writes customized software programs. Generally speaking, the value of the software house is equal to 7 multiplied by the annual sales or the annual turnover. You can also estimate the value of mobile phone companies, and the MMA that's used over there is between $1,500 to $2,500 per subscriber or per connection. So if you convert that into rupees, on the average, the value of a mobile phone company is equal to 100,000 rupees multiplied by the number of connections or the number of subscribers. You can also estimate the value of property in Pakistan with a simple MMA ratio. Generally, the value of property, or in other words, the property, by that I mean the value of a piece of land, is equal to, or the value of an apartment or a house is equal to 10 multiplied by the annual rental from that property. So these are various rules of thumbs that have been used in order to estimate the value of the firms. Finally, I would like to mention to you what the impact of the merger price or the negotiated price is on the value of the firms. So in other words, once the merger has gone through and a negotiated price was settled for the buying and selling of the shares of the target company, then we can take a look at that price per share and compare it to the fair value per share that we estimated using the discounted cash flow equation, And we can compare that to the market price of the share in order to find out what impact it has on the value of the acquiring firm and on the value of the target firm. So if the negotiated price at which the merger went through is greater than the fair value per share as calculated from the discounted cash flow equation, then there is a loss of value to the acquiring firm because they are paying more than what the fair worth of the target company is. Secondly, if the negotiated price per share that has been paid for the acquired company is greater than the market price of the share that was prevailing in the stock exchange before the merger, then there is an increase in value for the shareholders of the target firm. Why? Because they are being paid a price that is much higher than the fair worth of their shares. So it's important to keep in mind the effect that the merger has on the share price and the value of the target firm and the acquiring firm. With this, I would like to close this particular lecture, which was on mergers and acquisitions. Mergers and acquisitions has been covered in chapters 25 of Brigham and Gapensky, 8th edition. It is a very, very detailed and it is a highly specialized field in finance, and we have not been able to cover this in depth. I would urge you to read more about mergers and finance from other books as well as business journals. I would like to thank you for your kind attention and patience. On behalf of the Ministry of Science and Technology, Virtual University of Pakistan and Mubashir Humayun, Khuda Hafiz aur Assalamu Alaikum.